Improve it, peeps. Welcome to the show. If you are new here, I am Erin Deal, your host and the host with the most. She's feeling extra funky today. I'm so happy you pressed play on today's episode because it is so good. We're talking all about what it takes for women to gain respect, power, and influence in the workplace. And today's guest is going to spill some tea. So if you are a longtime listener of the show, welcome back. Here's my only ask, friend. If this show has motivated you in any way, number one, could you send it to a friend today? Can we bring more peeps to this amazing community of people leaders who care about the world and making it a little bit better than we found it? And could you also question and ask number two, if you have not already, rate and review this show. That is how we get amazing guests like today's guest on the show. You go to iTunes on Apple Podcasts, scroll to the bottom, hit 5 stars. You can leave a comment if you want. That's all it takes to bring more amazing content your way. So I want to just say first and foremost, I'm so excited for today's conversation and our theme this month. We are talking all about holiday motivation. It is holiday season, y'all. Thinking holiday cards. We've got to get gifts for our teachers. We got to get gifts for the neighbors. We've got to get gifts for our family. Not to mention, if you have kids, you've got to get gifts from Santa. And I will say that these tasks typically fall on the woman. Now, I love all of our male and non-binary listeners who listen to this show. We are a female-ran company, and we love our male facilitators here at Improve It. But women usually take on the tasks of being the motivator and the magic maker during the holiday season. We're planning the events, we're organizing, we're making magic happen. So today, our guest is going to talk about how we can continue to stay motivated. And if we aren't feeling like we have the respect or the power or the influence in our home, how we can get that for ourselves and how we can influence that in the workplace. Today, Allison Fregale is on the show, and I am so excited because she is the Mary Farley Ames Lee Distinguished Scholar of Organizational Behavior at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, Kenyon Flagler Business School. That is a mouthful. And Allison, let me just say this. She is a research psychologist. She's an award-winning professor, international keynote speaker, and now author. And let me just say, her mission of helping others, especially women, to use behavioral science to work and live better is coming full force in today's show. Her scholarship has been published in the most prestigious academic journals in her field and featured in prominent media outlets such as the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, Financial Times, Boston Globe, and Inc. She's in Chicago, and I used to be a Chicago native, so that means so much to me. And she lives there with her husband and 3 kids, who you will hear about in today's episode. So on today's show, I want to know if you click play because you want to up-level the playing field for women at work. You want the motivation to do this year-round, not just around the holidays. Or you yourself are a likable badass, which we're going to talk about, and you want to help women gain the success they deserve. Today's show is packed with a punch. So many tangibles. So have a pen and paper present. That's a mouthful. That's another tongue twister for you. Pen and paper present. And let's get to improving it with Allison Fregale. Okay, Allison, I feel like we're long lost sisters. Welcome to the Improve It podcast.
Oh, you are the best. Thank you for having me.
Oh my God. Okay, so this show is coming out in December, and we're talking all about holiday motivation this month. So I want you to just keep that top of mind, but I want us to take a deep breath in, and I want us to just think of an intention for you, for this conversation. It could be something you want to give yourself, something you want to give our audience, who we call the Improve It peeps. What's one word that comes to mind?
Joy.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, tell me more about that.
Just, I have been really busy, and I remember something a therapist of mine said years ago when I told her I was really stressed. And she said, you should be stressed because stress is what happens when demand exceeds supply. But stress in this case is a byproduct of a very happy life. And the idea that like we create a lot of our stress because we just fill our days with more and more and more good things. And so right now my days are really packed, but with things that are actually quite joyful, right? Getting to talk to amazing women about behavioral science and elevating their game and meeting new people and promoting my new book and all of these kinds of things that are very joyous. So that's what I really try hard to remember is stress is the byproduct of a very full life and to reclaim that feeling and say that's actually a joyous feeling.
Oh my God. I love that. And I love saying a full life, right? Like when you reframe into my life isn't so busy, it's very full. That says something that internally changes our mindset, which I am so here for. Because let me tell you, I know how much our thoughts affect everything in our life. And I just on a side note, on a side tangent of that, yesterday, I preached this all day long, how thoughts affect our words, affect our actions. And my thoughts were in such a negative space. And I could not find joy. Like I literally could not find joy yesterday. I slept, woke up today. It's a whole new ball game.
And isn't it amazing what one night of sleep can do for your mental and physical outlook?
God, but I was truly searching for joy in everything. I just couldn't get there because I wasn't thinking in the right way. So I love that that's our intention. I love that we're having this conversation when it's close to the holidays. And I also have to ask you this because this was part of your bio that just really spoke to me. You named your kids after professional athletes. I need to know their names immediately.
Okay. So they have Chicago athlete first names and they have Pittsburgh middle names because that's my hometown. Chicago is my husband's hometown and where we live now. And the Pittsburgh names are all Steelers and they're all of sports heroes that were of our generation as we were growing up. So I have two boys and a girl. So I have a Jordan Bradshaw for Michael Jordan and Terry Bradshaw. I have a Peyton Harris for Walter Payton and Franco Harris. And I have a Maddox Green. That's my daughter. We call her Maddie for Greg Maddox and Mean Joe Green.
Oh my God. That is epic. So you kept the theme alive after the first one. You're like, we're going strong.
Yeah, we had the first two names kind of picked out and we weren't sure if we had a third, what we were going to do. But once we went, we had two and we knew we had a third, we got to keep going. Now we're just quitters if we abandon it. So, at the time we lived in North Carolina with no thought that we would ever live in Chicago, despite it being my husband's hometown. And then no sooner did we have our third kid, we moved to Chicago. And I said, now we look like lunatics. Two people who are so obsessed with Chicago, they named their kids after three people in Chicago. But I'll tell you this. That my youngest is 9, my oldest is 15. No one has ever figured it out. Like, hello, Jordan, Peyton, Maddox. No one's ever said a thing.
That is wild. Well, it's a great one of those fun facts that you should always have in your back pocket because totally. I was like, I got to know their names. So, okay, we're going to talk all about your book, Likeable Badass. And we talked about this pre-show, but your book was endorsed by Kim Scott, who we love on this show. She's been here twice, and Adam Grant. And let me just say this, Adam Grant and I went to the same high school, Allison. Okay, he was a couple years older. I used to watch him on the swim team. But how are you feeling with the book being out in the world? And how are you feeling just knowing you have the endorsements of such great thought leaders under your belt?
It feels really good. But what I think the lesson for it that I say to people is your relationships really matter. So how, like Adam, I endorsed the book in part because Adam and I have known each other for 20 years. I don't think he would have endorsed it if he didn't want to endorse it, but we have a 20-year relationship. I hired Adam into his first job at the University of North Carolina.
Oh my God, stop.
So we go way back to when we were two assistant professors just having the offices next to each other and complaining about like being the two junior people in a department and trying to find our way. So and since then we've written papers together like and we've stayed, friends and colleagues for all those years. And so everyone is very starstruck by that. And Adam is amazing. He's brilliant. He's generous. Like it's so fun to see him so successful. But I think the idea is that, when you have a relationship that's based in reciprocity for a long time, like people do things for you. And Kim, who is just the most generous human the world has ever seen. She was also an introduction from a mutual friend. And I think she was so generous with me because this mutual friend is somebody who really, really values both of us. And he Kelly Leonard was so generous to do that. But I think it speaks to the idea of like how much the world runs on relationships, which is actually a central idea in my book that I try to get people to really understand of if you can authentically add value to relationships, there are all these ways that it comes back to you that elevates your own status, your own power, your own success. And you can do that with both authenticity and strategy. So those two both came to me because of the relationships that had been built, one directly and one indirectly.
Oh my God. I love that. And I can't wait to get into the principles of your book because, as I told you, I've researched you a lot. And I think there's so much insight that anyone, it doesn't have to necessarily be a woman who is listening to this show, can gain value from. So I want to start just with a conversation, or not a conversation, a question that one of our people from the Peeps community sent to us, because when I got this question, I thought, okay, you know who's going to answer it? Allison. So I'm going to play it for you here. Here we go.
Hey, Erin, as a woman in a pretty male-dominated field, what are some practical steps women can take to assert their presence and gain respect in a culture where they might be overlooked or undervalued?
Okay. And I love this question. I was like, okay, that's meant for Allison. So,
I mean, I almost feel like it was a plant. We agree it's not a plant, but it could have been a plant. That's so on point.
I know. Okay. And I was like, okay, so this person, and I will say that predominantly our audience, we have a lot of male listeners, but we also have a predominantly female audience. And so having this conversation, I think, is so impactful, not only for this listener, but for everyone in the Peeps community, because there are a lot of fundamentals when it comes to being a woman in the workplace. So I want to start at the beginning of your book. And I know one of the fundamentals that you talk about, and you mentioned even with your explanation of how you got these endorsements, is power and status. And I just want to start by differentiating the two. So what can we know about power and status, and what's the difference?
Okay. So yeah, this is the crux of the books. I'll start with power. Power is controlling resources that people value. So if you think about a person that has a lot of power, it's because they have something on some level that you want. If it's a boss, what they have might be the authority to give you a good performance review or a bad one, right? To promote you or not. You might have the power to spend your budget without approval. I always say if you have a teenager and you have the car keys, then you have power because you have a resource that they want. So power is having resources that other people value. That is important. It's important for our quality of life. It's something we all strive for. Status is how much we are respected and valued by other people. Do they look at us and think, that is a person I respect? Now, that I've studied status and power, but I've focused a lot on status in my work. And the central message of this book is understanding what status is, understanding why. To this listener's question, why women do get less respect and value than the identical actions by a male as a comparison, and what you can do about it. But the distinction I really make is we talk a lot about power in everyday life. We you see it come up, and we've coached people on trying to get more resources for women. We coach them on trying to get paid their worth and get promoted. And those are really important conversations. But the reason I wrote the book and the missing piece of it is this understanding that resources follow respect, I always say. That if you have resources to give, like if you're going to give somebody the authority to spend the budget or the authority to hire and fire, are you ever going to put that authority in the hands of somebody that you don't respect? Not if you can help it, because you'd think, well, they're not going to do a good job with it. So this idea that being valued and being respected is not only a fundamental human need, something we all seek and makes life better, it's also the prerequisite for getting the power we also deserve. And so what I'm hoping to do is by helping people take a step back and understand this second variable status, that people will start to see the world in a new way of like, oh, that's why that happened. And it's not my fault, but I do have some things I can do to fix it, even though I shouldn't have had to deal with it in the first place.
Totally. And that makes total sense. I mean, I'm just sitting here thinking about people who are in power, who I might not respect, right? And I might think, okay, that I'm not going to hand over the keys to my kingdom to that person.
No.
Right?
Exactly.
And so that makes total sense to me. And I'm sure for anybody listening, that makes total sense. And it makes total sense why this is the crux of the book. And so I want to talk a little bit more about status because this is just fascinating to me. And I know you've done the research on it and you have specifics. So you talk about it is a game. What does that mean? What do you mean by that?
Yeah, so I was struck when I was writing the book, and I use this analogy of status as a game. And turns out, if you look at people who study games, because you can study such a thing, that like many things, there's not consensus on what the definition of a game is, okay? But there's one influential definition that I thought, I was like, that makes a lot of sense. And the definition was a problem-solving activity approached with a playful attitude. That's all it takes for it to be a game. And I thought, wow, isn't that a great way to think about a lot of the things that we have to navigate in life? A problem to solve, like getting into college could be a game. Asking someone on a date could be a game. Getting a promotion could be a game. But managing your status, getting respect could be a game. It's a problem to solve, but it can be approached with a playful attitude. So I like that definition, that just because the problem is unfair and sometimes unpleasant, it doesn't mean that approaching it needs to necessarily be unpleasant or difficult. You could have some fun with it. And so one of the things I care a lot about with people, and I try to put into the book, is the idea that you can have fun solving problems that aren't your fault, that the solutions can actually be, can find joy in them. But the other thing about the game and the reason I use it is I say games aren't always fair, right? Whether it's Candyland or soccer or whatever, like things happen, you fall down, the referee makes a bad call. You have to deal with adversity that's not your fault and figure out a way and say, that's how these things go sometimes, but I'm going to persevere. And just because there was something unfair that happened doesn't mean I can't be victorious. And I think that is also something that I think works well for the game analogy for thinking about status.
I love that. My son plays Candyland, by the way. He's 5. Every day I'm doing up the, you know, I'm shooting.
Oh,
I'm,
yeah.
I always get the one that makes you go back to start. I think it's the gumdrop. I don't know, but I hear you because it is a game. If you look at life, and I like that you mentioned playful because we're big on that word around these parts, right?
Right.
When you can look at it as a problem to solve and you can have fun doing it, what a different mindset. That goes back to that whole idea of mindset work, right? And this is actually not my words, but Gabby Bernstein is an author I really love, spiritual author. And she always says, what if we measured our success not by the number on the scale or the number in our bank account, but by the amount of fun that we're having? So if we were to measure our success and our status by how much fun we're having solving the problem, like we're getting the point of this human experience, right? We're actually enjoying the ride.
That's right. And again, I can't stress enough that we can have fun with things, even if it's not our fault. So I could use an analogy of, you know, you might go to the doctor and the doctor says like, your blood results or whatever, you're trending up, you're at risk for whatever, diabetes or something. And you're like, well, that's not fun. And that's not fair. Why did I get that? But they're like, well, guess what? Like you can, if you exercise more and you eat better, you know, you're going to help it out. You're like, okay, here I go. But you could then find joy in those things. You're like, oh my gosh, like I wouldn't have played tennis if the doctor didn't tell me I had this thing. And like, now I'm really loving it. And isn't that great? And it's like, so I think there, but you can hold, you know, I think improv is definitely a whole idea of like holding two things simultaneously that often seem like they conflict. I mean, again, I'm a lay person when it comes to improv, but
you got it.
This idea. Oh, so maybe there's no such thing, but like the idea of holding those two things of like, man, I didn't really deserve to deal with this. Like I should be valued. People should just get it. Like I do great things. They should appreciate it from the get-go. But there can also be fun in, and this is what I love as a psychologist and ultimately how I got drawn to this field, because this was not my childhood dream or my first rodeo. I ended up in it because I loved thinking about what other people were thinking and figuring out like how I could show up to get them to think the thing I wanted them to think. And I was doing this a lot in my life and when I was a management consultant. And so that's really what psychology is and why I love telling people about it is, okay, you have this audience. And if you put yourself in the head of the audience, you could kind of influence how they see you, and not in nefarious ways, but just to get the outcomes that you want. And that's what I really want to help people do.
I freaking love it. Okay, I have two thoughts. Because this, oh, so good. So One is, you kind of in that conversation alluded to another fundamental of improv, because you're not an improv layperson. Okay. You know it. You got
okay.
this.
Okay.
So there's a fundamental that we preach is there are no mistakes, only gifts. So, you know, like you had to go to the doctor and now you're playing tennis more often, right? Like, and now you find out you love tennis. Like that was essentially could have been like a mistake because you were unhealthy and had to go to the doctor, but now you found the gift, right? And so I love that. And then it brings me to another thing that I really like that I researched or I found in the research while looking at your book is you mentioned that the idea of people don't care what other people think of you, because you're talking about how you were trying to figure out how people think and understanding that. But this idea of you don't want to care what other people think about you is a bad idea. So tell us more about that, because that I found so intriguing.
Yeah. And I always think it's the worst parenting advice we ever get. Like, you're a parent, I'm a parent. You say it all the time, but think about when you say it as a parent. You say it when your child is in a moment of pain, that they are not getting the results they want from their audience. And you see them in pain and you think, okay, well, if you could just like shield yourself from that, that would be better. And you want to turn inward and say, I actually think that literally taken word for word, not caring is perfectly sound advice. But I think what ends up happening is it gets interpreted as, ignore your audience. Don't try to influence your audience. Like the audience is an idiot. All those things. And those things are not going to serve us well in life, because any one person we can shield ourselves from. But we cannot live a life without an audience. Like we just live a public life. Even if you're a private figure who no one knows your name, you interact with other human beings. Those human beings are always drawing judgments about you, just like you are always drawing judgments about them. So this is what brains do. This is what people do. We live in collaboration and interaction with other human beings. So what they think is always going to come back on us, because the people you like more, you do more things for, you are, you know, you're a more best version of yourself when you interact with them. So it all starts with the thoughts in your head. So this idea of telling people, particularly at a young age, to turn away from their audience and turn inward, that psychology is just going to tell you that's not going to get you good results. So I say it's not ruminate, obsess, care. It's understand your audience. Here's your audience is if they're giving you a particular behavior, there's got to be a reason. If we can figure it out, maybe we can influence it. And that can all happen without obsessing, ruminating, crying on your pillow. But to say, I have a lot of influence over what you think. I don't perfectly control it, but I can influence it. And so if I don't like what I'm getting, I have to decide, do I want to cut you out and move elsewhere, which is fine in some cases, but you can't do that to everyone. In some cases, you've got to be able to say, I can influence you. I can make you see me the way I want to be seen. I can make you see the world the way I want you to see it. And that's what I try to help people think about, is that a lot of our happiness starts with what is in other people's heads about us, because status, my status is how much you respect me or people respect me. That exists only in your head. But the consequences of that to my life are very real and very far-reaching. My status, knowing that I'm respected or not by other people, affects my physical health. It affects my mental health, affects my longevity. And so we don't have the luxury of turning away from our social world. We are social beings. And that's where I want to say the message is a little more subtle than that, which is I don't want someone to obsess or ruminate, because you will not make everyone in the world love or respect you. But I don't want that to be misconstrued as a joy or a strategy of, I don't care. You know, I do what I want. And I don't like that kind of, I'm fine for authenticity, but authenticity can coexist with strategy, which is, I'm going to be who I am, but I'm also going to recognize that how I show up has consequences for how other people see me. And I can take those two truths and hold them. And I can then decide, you know, how I'm going to show up to get the results I want.
This is fascinating. Okay. Cause I'm coming through this recovering people pleaser lens. All right. Cause truly still in recovery will be till the day I die. Right. So I'm loving this as it plays out with status. And I'm loving this idea of how we can keep this top of mind. I like how we're acknowledging that authenticity exists in this, but we're not making it the through line. As we get into your book, Likeable Badass, which I love the title, how did this title come to be from all of these principles that we're talking about? Because power and status, overcoming, you know, these limiting beliefs of ourselves, making sure that we are repairing status with not only how we see ourselves, but how we see others see us, right? How we feel perceived by others. So we're, first of all, the title's amazing. Freaking love it. How did that title come? And how is this, how do you hope it's perceived? How do you hope the status of the title is perceived?
Yeah, I mean, back to the idea of it's a game and I want to have fun with it. I mean, I wrote about a serious topic that people need to understand, particularly women. It is a source of a lot of the unhappiness that women feel at work and in life, and the lack of power that women deserve to have and they don't yet have in parity in the workforce and all those things. So again, problem serious, but solution can be playful. And so the title comes from the science of status. Where does status come from? And the science is that there are two dimensions that we use when we pay attention to other people. So when we're kind of judging, looking at someone, our brain is categorizing them along these two dimensions. So again, I'll make it with my hands, but if you're just listening, you can envision an XY axis. So the Y axis is what I call assertiveness. That's our capability. Can you get stuff done? Are you things like competent, intelligent, persistent, decisive, organized? If you have that, it's like, you're a go-get-em person and I'm going to give you something and I know you're going to crush a task. So that's a dimension. And we respect people that we think they get stuff done. That's good. They're capable. Then the other dimension, the X-axis, is are you warm? Do you care about people other than yourself? Are you giving? Are you honest? Are you sincere? Versus are you selfish? Are you difficult? And we respect people who care about other people. So so those two dimensions, right? And if you ask people where they want to be in that little two-dimensional space, everyone in the world will give you the same answer. They will say, I want to be seen as capable and I want to be seen as caring. No, I mean, nobody gives you any, okay? That, and so likable badass is my caring and capable catchy name. And the underlying psychological, it's the interpersonal circumplex of person perception, but that didn't seem like it would get people to pick it up off the shelf, right? So you call it likable badass and people are like, but I'm like, it's playful because I do believe, right? That's what people, it's essentially, that's what we're going for. And this is where authenticity meets strategy. Everyone wants to be seen as a capable and caring person. Okay. That's authenticity. And strategy is, guess what? People who are seen as capable and caring get respect. So by showing up the way you really most want to be, you are going to get the reward you most want. And so that, but let me say something else on the recovering people pleaser, because I totally get it.
Yeah.
If you take people pleaser, normally when someone talks about being a people pleaser, they're going to be very high on the caring, but they're going to be low, not that they're incapable, they're going to be low on asserting themselves. They're going to be submitting to others' wishes. So instead of being kind of in the upper right, I'm very assertive and I care about you. People pleasing is normally what happens when we're sacrificing our own interests for the benefit of other people. So you're happy, but I'm not. And that's normally, we don't talk about just being pleasing in general. When you say people pleasing, the unspoken piece is, I am suffering because of it. I am taking less than what I need so that you can be happy. So this is, I came from the world of negotiation, teaching negotiation, which I still do. But a fundamental tenet of negotiation is like this way to succeed is to look for the way that you can be happy and I can be happy. And that's still people pleasing, but it doesn't take a toll on you. So what we want to do is for people who find themselves in that submissive and friendly, everyone likes them, but they're just constantly being like doing all the office housework and getting asked to do all the things. The key is not to be less pleasing. The key is to say, I'm going to find ways to care about you, but I'm going to amplify the ways I can care about myself. I'm going to amplify the ways I can assert myself. So it's not like I'm anti-pleasing. It's more I'm pro me as well. Like there is a way we can, and I'm going to look for ways where I can win and you can win.
Allison, let me just cut you the check right now because this. Listen, I'll give you my insurance. Do you take Blue Cross Blue 100%, Shield?
Sure.
Oh my God. Yes. Because truly, and I know so many women who, you know, you don't know everyone who is an improvement peep, but the people I talk to and connect with in our community, when I talk about people pleasing, it's the most downloaded show. Like if we called this show people, like literally, and when I'm going to, you know, likable badass is a great title as well. But when you talk about people pleasing, women especially relate. And that's so funny because on that axis, I would say that I would define myself as super, I would define myself as the badass, as very capable, But when it comes to friendships and relationships, I'm like, oh, what do they need? They want me to respond back now. It's 10 o'clock. They probably need me to text back right now. I should probably do that and sacrifice my sleep. I'm actually, that's not the badass. That's just the caring access at work, right? And so I do recognize that. And I will say, as women, it's really hard to draw those I'm generalizing. As myself, it's hard for me to draw those boundaries in personal relationships. It's mostly personal relationships that I suffer the most. And as I have been more pro Aaron and upped myself in the self-care game and set stricter boundaries with responding and giving to people, because, you know, replying to texts is usually just helping somebody else's needs and wants, right? I have seen more of the badass come to fruition, which is interesting in my personal life.
Absolutely. And so this, yeah, and I think the other thing you're bringing up is really important, which is these concepts, right, of how assertive am I, how caring am I, they shift relationship to relationship. So it's not a static thing. We are not always the same person. We can move around this space, therefore we can get very different results. And so what also happens is one of the things I found in my research is that people, when it comes to warmth, people mimic each other. So if you are very nice to me, I tend to bring out my niceness to you. And if you're mean to me, I'm mean to you. But when it comes to this assertiveness capability piece, people complement each other. So like, here's an example. Like before I was married, I did all my own investing. I did my own taxes. I did my own stuff. But as the longer I've been married to my husband, who is an investment professional, like we come, I have stopped doing all of those things. I now like, I have no ability to like fix a remote control. Our cable's out today. Can't fix it. Didn't even try. I'm like, you're going to do it. So what ends up happening is when you're in a relationship, one person tends to be on, even on a given dimension, I'm going to be the more capable, assertive one, and the other person's going to submit. And this is what we've found in our research, that people complement each other and they like it that way. So what ends up happening is if we show up as very submissive in our relationships, other people will start to take control because someone needs to. And then there's a natural tendency in relationships for one person to kind of be alpha and one person to be beta. And so if we're always showing up as beta and they're like, why is everyone so alpha around me? Well, because they're non-consciously complimenting you. So warmth begets warmth, but submissiveness emboldens other people's assertiveness. And if you've ever seen this, where you all of a sudden assert yourself and someone backs down, because they are doing this dance. So it's, the other thing I strongly believe about human behavior is that everybody gets to make choices for themselves informed by the best science that we have. And I would never tell anybody to be less submissive or to do this or do that. However, if you're not getting the results you want and you're in a world in which you are very submissive and other people are always playing alpha around you, one strategy is to say, well, if I start being more assertive in these interactions, then, and I take over that role, people naturally complement and they will become less assertive over time. So I think people pleasing, it ends up, you know, I always say like you'll spend your whole life fending off rabid alpha dogs.
Oh my God. Yes. This is like Allison, years of therapy boiled into 30 minutes right here. Okay. Truly. No, truly, truly. I think this, I even am thinking about one of my dear friends who we've been friends since college, and she was very submissive when it came to just the way that she showed up in college. She would just go with the flow, friend, whatever you want to do, easy breezy. And as she's grown in her career and she's really up on that badass line, her personal relationships have shifted. And I've told her, I was like, wow, it's really interesting to watch. Like you just know what you want. You have clear expectations and it's a beautiful thing to witness, but that is so true that you will always be, if you are submissive, adherent to that alpha dog. And I, at work, I'm a different human, but personally, it's something to work on and to note. And that was just such a clear picture for me. So thank you.
Of course. And if I can offer I'm really big on practical strategy. So if I can offer one thing in this case for you and to the listeners is that it's not always applicable in every situation, but one of the things you can do to help get what you want and what other people want is to move first, to be the first one to put an idea about what we're going to do. Because a lot of times submission comes with someone else has done something and you feel like you need to be the second party to react. And then you either have to do what they want or you're essentially implicitly or explicitly saying no. And that's where that whole conflict of being a people pleaser. So as an example, even like in high school, I did this great podcast with these two Canadian high school sisters, which I thought was just amazing that they had this podcast in high school. Anyway, I was talking to them about it. Like they were saying, how do you navigate peer pressure and thinking about the fact that, you know, your friends want to do this? I said, well, if you don't want to do what your friends do and you let them say first what the plan is going to be, then you're in the situation where you have to go along with it or say no, neither of which sounds particularly appealing. Why don't you move first? You know that plans will be made. If you don't know, if you think you're not going to like their plans, you put out the first idea. Why don't we do this, guys? And if you do it and everyone thinks it's fine, they're much more likely to submit to you. So this is something that doesn't just apply to high school peer pressure, but whatever it is, like even if it's my friends always want to go out and like have these late night drinking, but I don't like that. And that doesn't serve me. And I don't want to tell my friends no, but then every time I do it, I don't sleep well, whatever it is, to say, hey, anyone want a Sunday morning walk? I'm scheduling one. Who's in? You can start to still say, I care about you. But the more that we move first, and whether that's in asking for money in a negotiation or planning things with friends, you are able to get more of what you want without having to have that awkward, I either do what they say or I tell them no. So flipping it to moving first can be.
Oh, Allison, this is wonderful. And I know so many women listening are going to reach out to me after this episode, because for me, right here, sitting here today, you just put into context my internal dialogue for the past week. Okay. And it just, it's so refreshing to know that this is backed by science. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. First move, baby. This is, you know, a very easy question, but I want to know your perspective on it. I know if we don't have power or status, our mental health suffers, but how does it suffer? How do we suffer if we aren't claiming our own status or power?
Yeah, I mean, we've had these feelings. Anytime you feel like someone, and this is in your listener's question, right? People don't value me. They don't respect me. You can sense it. You can sense that you are not valued because of the implicit and explicit messages that you are getting. And lacking respect, right, is just this terrible feeling because it's something that we all seek. So all these things, imposter syndrome, I'm not good enough, losing my confidence, and all these things then compound upon themselves. When we lack confidence, we also tend to lose status because the confident person in the room is seen as smarter, and we give the respect to the people that we think of it as smart. So this is starts to become this negative reinforcing cycle where we start to feel disrespected and we turn in on ourselves and we turn it. And I mean, one of the most, you ever see those statistics like in your work that make you unhappy and happy at the same time? So one of them for me, because it validated the book, which was happy, but the unhappy was like, this is sad that women have to deal with this, was that Chief had done a survey of senior leaders and about women considering leaving the workforce. And you would think, right, if you had to guess, what are the things that women are least happy about that might cause them to leave? You would think, oh, being underpaid and being underpromoted, like underplaced. Those were number two and three. But number one, not feeling respected and valued.
Yes, yes.
You're just like, I'm out. I don't, you know, I mean, when you think your kids don't value your respect you for right. all the work, whatever it is, it cuts to your soul because it is what psychologists describe as a fundamental human need, just like our need for friends. In the same way, when you feel like you don't have affiliation or friendships, that loneliness, which, you know, is an epidemic and people write a lot about it. This is the epidemic we're not talking about, is that people being disrespected and undervalued.
I mean, and that is exactly what our listener asked. They're in these male-dominated fields, right? And I work with a lot of, at Improve It, believe it or not, one of our biggest industries is tech. And I work with a specific group in tech, women in tech, in any field. It's a constant conversation. And I can see that playing out because it's a reoccurring theme, so much so that there's millions of ERG groups out there for women in tech to support these fundamentals and help them with their mental health. So I can see, I know this research is so valuable. I know the power of this book and its status is going to elevate people, but I truly love that not only do you understand these fundamentals, you have research, you have science, you have data to support these facts. So anybody listening who wants a place to start has got to pick up a copy of Likeable Badass. I want to ask you this question. Who's a likable badass in your own life? If you could name one person, it could be somebody you know or somebody that you just respect and look to as a mentor that from a distance, who would that likable badass be?
There are a couple, I actually talk about them in the book. So one is my now deceased maternal grandmother. I really, and I didn't have the language for this in her lifetime, but I really appreciated her ability to assert herself and make people love her in the process. And I talk a little bit about it. But what I think about this is my grandmother was a retired hairstylist. She didn't go to college. She grew up in the house that her parents owned, and she was one of 13 kids or something like that. And I think this idea of people who are likable badass is what I like celebrating, is that there are famous people that we think of that way, but most of the people that we say that is a really giving person who is really capable are just like people next door. When I ask people to name them, they're like my high school music teacher, my next door neighbor, you know? But another one who's in the book and was really transformational for me was when I got to graduate school just to get my PhD. My advisor was not only a brilliant academic, she was really brilliant at thinking about investing in her relationships, but also getting back from her relationships. And as she started to talk to me about those things and managing those as a professional woman, and I started doing this research on status, it was really that enabled me to bring the two together. And her name's Maggie Neal. And so I appreciate them, my grandmother and my graduate school advisor, both in different ways.
I love it. Okay. Well, what's your grandmother's name?
Marge.
Marge. She's Grandma Marge. She's shining down. Marge.
She chain smoked cigarettes and played bingo and drank highballs, seven up in whiskey.
Yes, Marge, we are a likable badass. And let's also give it up to Maggie, okay? Right. And hopefully Maggie gets an episode of this show and gets a copy of the book and feels all that love. Because truly, you can be a likable badass in your everyday life. And when we give people those flowers, they need them while they're still here. So Marge,
yes,
we're giving this one for you now. And then Maggie, this one's for you now, okay? So let me ask you this question. If people want to get a copy of your book, if they want to find you, where can they find you? What's the easiest places? Tell me all the things.
Okay. So Likeable Badass, you can get it anywhere you love to buy a book. For me and my content, I would drive people, everybody, to go to my website, allisonforgale.com. And while you're there, there's a couple of resources. One is I put out a free newsletter called The Upper Hand, Behavioral Science to Help Women Excel. So you can sign up for it from my website. It's on Substack. But that's always where it's a great place to stay connected with me. And for people who like to be on social, I was predominantly on LinkedIn, and I'm a newer person on Instagram, but I'm on both of those. And that's another place where I try to put out different kinds of content. Okay, I know we might be wrapping up based on that question, but is there time for me to offer one specific technique to this listener's question?
Yes, I would love that. And and I hope that we did answer this listener's question, but I want you to go as tangible as we can.
I just want to offer, because this is this is what I put in the book. The book spends the first chapter or so talking about the problem and the rest of it talking about what you can do. So if this idea of you're at work and you don't feel valued or respected, I do talk a lot about you need to reclaim your story, because most of what people know about you comes from you. So if you're putting a weak story out into the world, you cannot be surprised that people don't respect and value you, because you're the expert on yourself. One strategy to use to put your story out there without feeling like you're being too self-promoting is what researchers call dual promotion. And that is to say something positive about yourself while also giving credit to other people who had a role in that. So you could imagine sending a status update to your boss and your boss's boss about what you're working on and saying, here's the successes we've had this week. We're ahead of schedule. And special thanks, right, go to Aaron and Allison, because they've really worked tirelessly on the team to make this happen. So next time you see them in the hall, please give them a thank you. And that is a great way that you could start telling a stronger story about yourself, but building that warmth and caring, because you're elevating other people at the same time. That's one. And the second one, back to joy, that takes no courage whatsoever, but is a great way to live, but has a tremendous amount of benefit, is start talking other people up. So human behavior is reciprocated. So if you say something good about another person and you are essentially building their status for them while they're not around, like, oh my God, you need to meet Erin. She's hilarious. She's brilliant. She's so generous. And as soon as that's said, when you walk into the room, you've already have status because someone else has done it for you. But if you do that for other people, they will do it for you. And one of the easiest ways to get respected is to have other people walking around talking about how amazing you are. And then that is what people are going to hear. And that's going to be the starting point when they get to know you. You already start way ahead. And there's a variety of ways I talk about in the book to make it happen. But one is just start talking other people up. Because when they find out, which they will want to return the favor. They will start saying good things about you. And here we are, not all worrying about having to build our own status, but engaged in this reciprocal, like beautiful dance of building each other's. So if you do nothing else other than when you think something good about another person, like put it out into the world, that will build your status over time as much as anything else. And that doesn't take any courage, just a fun way to live. And that's back to this idea that you can find joy in solving a problem that you didn't create. So,
well, Allison, full circle. You took the circle and then you connected it all the way around.
Joy was my first word and my last word. Yeah.
Yes. I am so here for that. And let me just tell you that, you know, I know there's science and research beyond that, but just from like a humanistic spiritual perspective, when you put out good energy, you are going to receive it back. And not only are you, when you give, building yourself and giving yourself more joy, you're giving joy to the world. So you're helping the human collective by just even giving that praise to somebody else. I love that. And there's so much joy in that. Okay. Right? This is my final question. Yeah. Okay. We ask every listener this because at Improve It, we say you're it. Is your thing. It is that thing that you were put on this planet to do. I know it's like, what is your life's purpose? But Allison, if you had to say what your it is, what is Allison's it?
Yeah, I think it's this, which is what do I love? What lights me up is psychology designed for women's life satisfaction and excellence. That is what I love. And over the years, like I always say, I didn't start out like, I started doing this kind of stuff for everyone. But what I found was it being in the company of women, helping them use this science, it is the thing, you know, that I absolutely, that and coffee, but.
Oh, yeah. Coffee fuels this.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. So, oh my God. Well, I'm so glad that you're doing it. You're bringing joy to the world. You're bringing light to the world and you're helping women everywhere. And I know our Improve It peeps, especially our listener, we want to thank you for sending that question, are going to benefit from this conversation. But I cannot wait for people to get likable badass in their hands. It's a beautiful cover, by the way. So you're going to like, it's one of those like Instagram beautiful books. So grab your copy. Follow Allison, go to her website and all the things and join her newsletter as well. But Allison, I've had so much more joy to my day getting to talk to you. And I cannot wait to continue to help sing your praises, give you some more status. So thank you for being here.
Right back at you. You're amazing.
Improve It peeps. Oh my God. I love Allison. What a light. And also what a resource. Not only is her research backed by her data and just a quantitative, qualitative analysis of human behavior, but she has so many tangibles for us to gain power and status and to feel seen in the workplace. I want to thank again our listener who gave us that beautiful question here today. And I want to encourage you, if you have a question, to pop in the show. You can do that in the show notes. There is a link to send us a SpeakPipe question. You can hit record. It will come straight to us. And we will answer that question either with a guest or a solo show here by myself. So please make sure you're doing that so we can bring some value to you and help answer your most burning questions. I want you to walk away from today's show thinking about your own status. Are you a likable badass? Are you caring and are you competent? And if one or two of those falls on the other side, like myself in the people-pleasing category in my personal life, how can you show up more confidently and authentically competent in your own life today? I'm leaving you with a journal prompt. So take that journal prompt, put it to use, think about how you can be more caring and competent and the likable badass that you want to be. And I'll see you next time while we improve it. You know what I'm here to say. Keep failing, keep improving, because this world needs that very special it that only you can bring. See you next time, peeps. Improve it.
Move It
Podcast.